We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Red Sox Nation. Fuel up the duck boats.
Attorney General Peter Kilmartin, as the state's lawyer, what's your view of the constitutionality of the overhaul of the state pension system in 2011?
Well, as you know, that's in the court process right now. If it goes to a trial phase, our office will actually be involved in it. Our duty is to defend the lawsuit. It's in mediation.
But what do you think? Do you think it was constitutional?
Well, in Rhode Island, there's a presumption that a statute passed by the General Assembly is constitutional. That presumption is there, which is a big presumption to overcome in the court process. But this is very early in that game. The judge, as happens in many civil trials, if not most, has ordered a mediation. That process is ongoing. And if they come to a resolution, that still will not end it, because then you have to go back to the General Assembly. So this is very, very early in that process. And I don't see an answer to this conundrum for at least a couple of years until it plays out through the court system.
I'd like to ask you about another thorny issue, wind power. Some critics say that Rhode Island shouldn't be paying almost 25 cents per kilowatt hour to buy wind from deep water wind when wind power is available at a much lower rate from the state of Maine, about 8 cents per kilowatt hour, I believe, and Canadian hydroelectric power is very plentiful. Why was the State Public Utilities Commission wrong when it initially rejected the state's deal with deep water wind?
The utilities focus in the very beginning. They just look at the rates. They don't look at they can't look at the benefits of wind power, of alternative energy. They can't take in some of the intangibles. They look at rates. So I won't necessarily state that they were wrong in saying that those rates were high. But what had to happen was we had to get beyond that to have the full debate later as to, should we move forward with this? Is it feasible? Can we get all the proper permitting from both the federal and state agencies who are involved and do the oversight? Not to be redundant, but this process still has a long way to go before there's any approval on that.
And just quickly, in your view, why does it make sense to pay that higher rate to deep water wind than through some other sources?
Well, again, the question is long term. If you look at Europe and everything going on in Europe, you see the wind farms. They're working. They are out there. They are reducing our carbon footprint on this planet. So it's a cost benefit. And the benefit is that we get a cleaner environment, we get a less of a carbon footprint, and we have to weigh that. And that's a public policy decision that this state is going to have to make at the appropriate time.
Let's go to Scott.
But does really Canadian hydropower, that's not causing a carbon footprint, is it?
No, I'm saying there are other forms of energy out there that do not cause carbon footprints, but this is yet another one that would not. So rather than putting every egg in one basket, people are looking at alternatives. That's why it's called alternative energy.
Has your office reviewed the civilian complaint in the 38 Studios case for potential charges?
I will tell you that, first of all, we do not confirm or deny any investigation by our office. But we are the prosecuting agency. It's up to the state police, and they have acknowledged that there's an ongoing investigation in 38 Studios. So as part of that investigation, I am confident that what was produced in the civil trial has been viewed by the state police. I'm confident that has happened or will happen, and that the due diligence of that investigation is going forward. If our office had a role in it, it would be a supplemental role where the evidence would be brought to us, and then we either prosecute or we don't, depending on where that evidence falls. But right now, as any investigation, speaking generally, it starts with the police agencies doing the investigation. We are not the investigative agency. We are the prosecuting agency.
You were a 20-year state lawmaker before becoming attorney general, close to some of the people who run the show up there, including House Speaker Gordon Fox. Can you assure the public that your office will fully conduct its responsibilities with regard to 38 Studios in light of that?
I can assure them by example. We prosecuted Chief John Whiting in North Providence. I worked with John. I'm a friend of John's. He broke the law. We prosecuted him, and that was under my administration. So I think if you look at my record, you will see that we've prosecuted the law without fear, favor, or ill will.
Looking back at 38 Studios, I mean, you've had a lot of time to think about this. Just off the top of your head, do you think there's criminality there, or was this just a colossally stupid investment?
Well, it would be unfair for me, if there is an investigation going on, for me to mention whether or not I personally believe there's criminal activity going on. Let the investigation play out, and if something comes forward, it'll be made public.
Why is it taking so long?
One thing I've learned in almost 30 years of the criminal justice system, One, you don't put timelines on investigations. They often lead down side roads. You can't put a timeline on an investigation, number one, because you want to be thorough. You don't want to miss something, or you don't want to charge someone who shouldn't be charged. And you have to be fair to those people who are a subject of an investigation. That's what the justice system's about. It's not about willfully prosecuting someone because it's politically correct. You prosecute someone because it's the right thing to do under the justice system.
We're talking here with Rhode Island Attorney General Peter Kilmartin. General, when do you plan to announce your reelection campaign?
Candidly, I have not put a date on it. What I will tell you and what I've said publicly and privately to people is I have every intention of running. I don't see any reason not to run. I am very fortunate that the citizens of the state have given me this office. I smile on my way to work every day. And despite all of the tragedies and the problems we see firsthand throughout the state, knowing that people in my office and myself make a difference to hopefully bring justice to victims, that makes you feel good. And we're working hard to do that. And I'm more than willing to go out and put my record before the public.
You face a potential challenge but from Republican State Senator Dawson Hodgson, who has criticized you for not being more proactive as Attorney General. How do you respond?
I haven't heard those criticisms from him. And candidly, from someone who was a junior prosecutor, a junior senator that I know of has never led anyone, we'll let that all play out in the campaign.
You know, nearly 90 people have been shot on the streets of Providence this year. What is the best thing we could do? If you were a philosopher king and could do one thing to attack gun violence, what law would you pass?
We need to remember that, unfortunately, we have illegal guns on the street. One thing I would like to do is give us the criminal tools, as I've put forward in the legislature for several years, to charge juveniles who are in possession of guns and those who provide them to the juveniles. That's one thing I would do right off the bat. But part of this gets back to something I alluded to earlier, and they're doing a good job with it. If you look at the press conferences Providence Police have put out, and we've participated in with them, as has the U.S. Attorney, it's the boots on the ground. They're working very hard to get the guns off the street. I believe they have taken in at least 100 this year. We are prosecuting people for crimes of violence in the city of Providence. So it starts at the local neighborhoods, and it also starts with the citizens. If they are in their neighborhood, they need to know that they can call the police department and provide them information. They are the best set of eyes, the citizens.
Your office has responsibility for policing violations of the state's Access to Public Records Act and the Open Meetings Act. What, if anything, should be done to increase compliance with those acts? Are the current penalties for violations sufficient?
Well, as you know, I sponsored in the legislature and put forward this year an update to the act. We are now hopefully applying that, and people are taking it seriously. It gets down to the education, but it's amazing to me. We do the August seminar every year. We have 500, 600, 700 people attending. We put it online for the first time so people can watch it live stream and can access it. And yet we still have simple violations. I simply don't understand how hard is it to say, okay, you have 10 days to respond, governmental agency, at least send a letter saying you need more time. We make the offer to go out to cities and towns, to agencies. I have sitting on my desk dozens of letters going out to local fire districts saying you are now under the Access to Public Records Act. In open meetings, just to notify them, so they can't say, well, we didn't know that act passed. I'll be signing those letters, hopefully, this afternoon.
Do these violations and these delays show a need for stiffer violations?
One of the problems with stiffer violations, yes. When we need to do the hammer, you do the hammer. We just fined people this week, or we brought actions against people this week. At the end of the day, though, they're still paying with taxpayer dollars. So by us illuminating it, bringing it out, the transparency, I think really the citizenry needs to pay attention and ask their government leaders, why is this happening under your administration? Why are you wasting my taxpayer dollars because you didn't send a letter within 10 days?
Speaking of transparency, should the names of lawyers who apply to the Judicial Nominating Commission for state judgeships be public?
Well, I'll tell you what. I have attorneys who apply to my office, and they work in private business. And when they apply, they'll say, look, if you are thinking of hiring me and you're going to do the investigation, would you give me the heads up? Only because my employer doesn't know that I'm seeking a job somewhere else and they could hold that against me. You know, so there are real human factors involved here. There are circuit courts of which the Rhode Island statute is based, Corps v. the U.S. Postal Service, that go way back that say, once you are in the final stages, yes, your name should become public. Where do you draw the line? you get a company who gets tax breaks in the city of Providence. They are getting taxpayer dollars one way or the other. You know, do we have all of their employees become public record? Where do you draw the line? You're applying for a job.
You mentioned the U.S. Attorney's Office a bit earlier, and that office seems to often play the lead role in investigating and prosecuting public corruption in Rhode Island. What role should the Attorney General's Office be playing in those kind of cases?
I have personally put forward legislation to give us many of the tools that the U.S. Attorney's Office has to combat public corruption. The General Assembly has not chosen to pass those bills. That goes back to my days as a legislator when I was trying to do that. The upside to that is Peter Noronha and I have a great relationship. Our staffs talk, we talk, and we coordinate these efforts to make sure that someone is being held accountable.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And Attorney General Peter Kilmartin.
Pleasure. Thank you.